For March the 11th, 2022, we talk about Elden Ring, Valheim, and The Last of Us Part 2. Welcome to Level 405. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I am David Myersmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We are back. As Ben said earlier, I have emerged from the mines, the Elden Ring mines. For a moment, I have not actually beaten the game yet because it's gigantic, but I am here.
Is there a mine?
Many. There are, in fact, many mines. it's the best place to get smithing stones.
Well, Cole, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
How dare you, if you haven't finished it yet, the content gods demand that you continue grinding at it until you are done.
No, they don't. I do not.
He just has to be one step ahead of what he's podcasting about, so he doesn't have to beat it yet.
I'd like to be a little bit more ahead than that.
sure.
No, you treat it like a college course where you start out ahead of it, and feeling like you're all prepared and everything, and then by the end of it, you're finishing everything the night before it's due.
Cramming the boss.
like it's always the intention to have it beaten, as quickly as possible. But like with this one, I mean, it's legit. Like people's clear times have been, in the 80 to 100 hours, plus. It just like, yes, technically there have been more hours than that since it came out. You could say I've been slacking in that regard. I have to do other stuff. Like we had less recording, but we still had recording last week.
An excellent headline that came out of Hard Drive was right when Elden Ring released was reviewer who beat 80 plus hour game in a single week finds it slightly repetitive.
Yeah. So
I have more questions about the game proper during the grind, but for now, I just wanted to ask, have you played enough that you know kind of the format of how you're going to go about reviewing it with Gary? Or
yes. Yeah, we have a reckon. We have a reckon on how that season will play out on patreon.com/duckfeedtv.
That's sweet. That's good. That's probably takes a load off at least.
Yes. Yeah. No. The way that I put it on Twitter was, I chugged until I realized that chugging was impossible, and I fell back to brisk sips. I'm currently sipping the game briskly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We gotta have spacers in there too. Like, I don't want to know what a Dark Souls hangover looks like. So
no. I had one after Dark Souls 2. But that like
I think
that
everyone was... had one after Dark Souls.
I like Dark Souls 2 quite a bit. Like it's a really good game. It's just that was a game that is also like really really big, and mm-hmm. I beat it over the course of a week, and it just was it took a chunk out of me, so
tell me, if you have a Dark Souls hangover on Dark Souls 2 and you throw up, is that how you get Dark Souls 3?
High five, buddy.
So I was gonna say I think Dark Souls 2 is the Dark Souls hangover.
I disagree, but that is not an uncommon position.
Remember, I know nothing about these games. I'm just taking blind shots here.
Yes. Yeah, I famously don't care for Dark Souls 3. People have accused us of faking not liking it for attention. After people accused us of faking liking, Dark Souls 2 for money. They accused us of being paid off for liking Dark Souls 2.
Well, you were paid in exposure.
Of course. Ultimately. Yeah.
I just like the image of, is it Miyazaki, the guy that's kind of the figurehead?
Yeah.
I just like the image of him, slipping you an envelope full of cash.
Keep we up will the never, good work, boys.
We will never speak like, of this.
I don't know if he even speaks English. So I just love the image of, like, just some dude doesn't know you, somehow is passing you cash.
Yeah.
The envelope just says, you are paid in giant red letters.
So that, I mean, that's honestly, like, in the time that we've been, you know, kind of not recording since the last time you recorded, I've mostly been spent, you know, playing Elden Ring, doing like home improvement stuff, but nobody wants to hear about my oscillating multi-tool, you know.
Oh, another nice.
Another vague Elden Ring question is, do you kind of know where it ranks amongst the other Dark Soul games?
I'd have to finish it. Like, right now, okay. I really, really enjoy it. Like, I'm having a good time. Like, it would be hard without seeing it through to say, sure, where it feels like it would it would land.
Does it got better a shot at being number one?
Maybe.
Okay.
Better than Sekiro?
Sekiro?
Yes.
Oh yeah, for some pretty fundamental reasons regarding things like player choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that is my stuff. Ooh, and I got a new computer today, or I ordered one.
I buried the lead.
No, I'm excited. They announced the Mac Studio, which is kind of a midpoint between the Mac Mini and the Mac Pro. And I'm real excited. It's going to be showing up around the end of the month, which will be cool. I think that'll be neat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Side note, day after we recorded last, a war broke out. That was kind of weird, right?
Yeah, that was, hard. It has been hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't need to get into politics on this episode, but I just wanted to throw that out there since that was something we haven't talked about or addressed since the last time we talked.
It sucks.
I feel like it's not really politics, though. It's just like, don't be on the side of the fascists.
Yeah.
You think that would be an easy, non-controversial stance?
No, but the people... the people who are starting a land war in Europe in order to grab land that they believe is part of an ancestral heritage, hearkening back to a non-existent golden age, with one of the primary goals being to crush LGBT and minority people, that is the side that is saying, no, it's Ukraine who has the neo-Nazis, which they do. Like, that there are some there. They also have a Jewish president.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, who they say is a neo-Nazi.
Yeah, so incoherent is what I would say, and don't come at me with apologia for, again, the country that is waging a war of choice and a war of aggression to, again, claim land in Europe.
Yep.
It's another, another level reminder, don't kill people or don't support people who kill people.
Yeah, also, hey, Saudi Arabia, fucking cut it out with Yemen, you dicks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway,
our hot take for the week: war is bad.
Ben, since you opened that one up, how you doing, bud?
Sorry. I mean, you know, there were a couple days where I was probably following that stuff too closely.
Yeah,
feeling too great about all that stuff. But I think one at least positive or cool experience I had in the past 2 weeks that I'll talk about in the grind is I got to do the Storybook Brawl tournament for the month.
Neat.
That I got Mythic. And so that was a pretty fun time, and I'll talk about that later. But yeah, that was nice.
That is cool. How about you, David?
Not a whole lot. Had a mini Comic-Con locally. Super small, mostly just like vendors and people dressing up because they want. I mean, I guess all Comic-Cons and people dress up because they wanted to, but like it was very much, I guess the event was more, hey, let's come up with an excuse to all like dress up and do stuff, as opposed to, you know, being as much of an event as some of them are, which, you know, is kind of fun. You know, that's kind of endearing.
Nice. Did you end up like getting anything cool while you were there? Because I always like seeing the vendors.
There's a much bigger one with like a band I really like is going to be playing there, that sort of thing, in April. So I'm kind of, you know, saving my ammo for that.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. I'm glad you had a good time. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. I, this week, got the Pokemon Battle Arena starter kit game for Luke and Milo.
What is Pokemon Battle Arena?
Well, you guys, I don't want to be a kingmaker, but I think this Pokemon thing might catch on here. No, so it's like a, you know, a box that you buy. It's got three pre-made decks, so you can actually play like the physical Pokemon card game. And Luke had gotten a bunch of cards from a neighbor kid and was all excited, wanted to try playing the game, and then realized that none of the cards were energy cards. I was like, oh, we can't really actually play this game.
We need mana.
Yeah, and he was like really bummed and clearly was excited to actually play the game instead of just look at the characters. So I picked this up, and we've spent the last 3 days or so having Luke and Milo battle back and forth with Pokemon cards, like actually following the rules instead of just yelling attacks loudly.
Blood for blood.
Now, let me be clear. They still yell all their attacks loudly. I think their favorite part is the attack phase of every turn where they yell the Pokemon's name and then tell them to use whatever thing before they put down damage counters. So. It is adorable. And I had like a proud dad moment where, you know, Milo is playing, he's looking at his, he's like, well, I've got this card that would allow me to like, he didn't use these, I'm paraphrasing, but you know, I could draw more cards by reshuffling my hand in was the card, but I don't want to do that because I've got this like combo in my hand. So I need to hang on to that. I was like, he's learning. He's, oh my God.
He's planning.
Yes.
And so that was Max Mid.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been a good old time. There's like a fire deck, a electricity deck, and then a, whatever Mewtwo is, psychic deck.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And each one's got the, you know,
the
shiny
eyeball deck.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah, so for like, I've played the Pokemon video games a little bit, but never played the card game as a kid, so I'm learning the game alongside them as well.
It's a good card game.
It is, yeah. And it's the thing that I really appreciate is that every game, win or lose, each side like got to have a cool moment. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I got my GX shiny Pokemon out, or I, you know, had this big turn where I evolved something and got a kill with it the same turn or whatever. Also, it's very hard to not just say, yeah, you killed that other Pokemon as you're discussing what happened. Like, I'm trying to say, oh yeah, that one fainted, but we all know you killed it.
See, it always bothered me that, like, if you won, why do you faint if you lose, you know, in the video game? And then also, like, you lose half your money. It's like, did that person just mug me?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
He took money from your pocket to pay for the Uber to the Poke healing station.
That's it. Yeah. No, I think it in Sword and Shield, at least, it has some text screen about like you carry your Pokemon back. So,
oh, really?
Like you are conscious in that. It just does not show your actions because that would require more than three animations from Game Freak, and that doesn't happen.
Can't be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's been super fun. Like I said, I think Pokemon might catch on at some point.
Well, you better call those those freaks at Game Freak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Neat. Well, I'm happy you're having fun with the kids, even though you did technically sneak video game or game related stuff into the opening. And we'll
I like to think board games is a special extra area.
Okay, Ben. But I can do that. Okay. All right.
Okay, Ben, what are you talking about?
No, I just get Ben.
I squeeze him in sometimes.
Yeah.
Are you saying Ben finds rule nuances?
Yes, I am.
See, we need a new section for game lawyering of what constitutes a game that we can include on the show.
Oh my gosh. Not on the show, in this segment. Also, I don't really care. It's just a fun bit for now. I'll probably drop it in an episode or two. One or two regular episodes like this is gonna be what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Let me look here and see. David, we're going to go to you first because you have been away the longest. What have you been playing since you were last on?
Sure. So, been continuing on with Idol Champions. That's kind of a samey game, so I'm just going to go real quick on it.
Okay.
There was a another event, so that was fun. Unlocked a bunch of new champions. They also did a charity thing where, I don't know, buy some stuff in the gem store. Actually, ironically enough, the gems are not how you the gem store is the in-game one, and the not gem store is the but anyways. But yeah, buy some stuff in the whatever real money store, and they donate the proceeds to Ukraine, which was cool.
Oh, nice.
So did some of that. The other thing that's just fun that I'm going to kind of pitch is the more I watch it, the more their tie-in live play D&D streams become more and more compelling.
Okay.
Because it basically ends up they have something like three or four DMs, basically three or four games that they sponsor, but they all periodically trade off players and stuff like that. So it's in effect they have created the D&D cinematic universe or whatever.
Okay.
So it's actually a lot of fun. It's also kind of cool that because of, the nature of this kind of being based on this game and sort of, having to support, the teams, the players tend to be very heterogeneous and homogeneous. Lots of different things.
Heterogeneous.
In terms of the characters' alignments, which is not something you normally see from most adventuring parties.
Yeah.
And so that's just a lot of fun. So not a lot on this, just it continues to be a fun pastime.
Here's how dumb I am. I was about to ask, what setting are they playing those games in? And Forgotten Realms.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, apparently, now that everything is Wizards of the Coast, also, randomly, Planescape and Ravenloft.
So those were always D&D related things. I think TSR owned those. Yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. But. That's been fun. Other than that, it's just been Elden Ring, so I feel like I'm just gonna hold action until Elden Ring discussion starts.
I am not going to bring Elden Ring for mine. So go ahead and start your thoughts on it. We can, if you would like to, anyway, if you feel like you've gotten far enough to say, there's no moratorium.
David, your goal is to trigger Cole as hard as possible now that he's promised he won't talk about it.
No, I'm not promised I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just not going to bring it. I'm not going to, if people want to hear me speak about it, they can go they can go to Bonfireside Chat. I'm interested in what you have to say.
Yeah, he's not a pacifist. He just doesn't believe in wars of aggression. So where I'm at, I just beat the first boss, and then am exploring the first dungeon.
Okay, so you beat
the first story boss and the first actual dungeon.
So you beat Margit.
Yes.
Okay, and you're in Stormveil Castle. All right.
Correct. Yes. However, I'm interested to see how the overmap and stuff like that plays out, because at least from what appears to be the case, I've explored at least 2/3 of the overworld. I'm guessing that is not a thing, but regardless, I've spent
Cole laughs at you.
Been the fallout of Elder Scrolls games, in that I've spent relatively little time actually doing anything I'm quote unquote supposed to be doing, and a lot of time just getting chased by demon dogs across Mushroom Land.
Yeah. I mean that's what they want you to do. For me anyway, the game tells you you can follow the trail of light that leaves save points, right? And you know that that'll guide you to your next objective, and that will steer you. It's like running a cat straight into a wall with a laser pointer. Not that I've ever done that. It will steer you directly into those gates and that boss, which is its move variety and the amount of arena coverage that it has is real mid game Dark Souls 3. It's pretty hard.
Yeah. I would say it's probably I don't know, in terms of difficulty I had with it, probably top 5 Soulsborne bosses for me.
In terms of difficulty or in terms of quality, oh, that was a really good fight?
In terms of difficulty,
yeah,
and specifically in terms of how difficult it was for me, by which I mean, at least my experience has been, that in a Soulsborne game, the more tools you have to work with, even though things get more difficult in absolute terms, they get kind of less difficult relative to you as the player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, for example, I've had to look at the wiki some, because I'm running a arcane build that relies on status effects.
Mm-hmm.
However, I didn't actually have any weapons that could produce status effects.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some stuff like that where it was kind of artificially, it's a little bit artificially hard for where it is in the game, in where players are likely to start trying it.
Mm-hmm. The unspoken second part of what I said about how it leads you right into that wall is you're meant to bounce off of it and hit everything else. So I went and found as much as I could that didn't involve going through that. And I cleared the entire peninsula to the south before I went back and took them out. So that is one of those things, whereas Sekiro especially, but even Dark Souls 3 to an extent got like this, at a certain point, that boss is standing, at the base of that funnel, stopping you from going through. Your options narrow until you clear this, and then it opens up again. There are different places for you to go and get stronger or find a better weapon or find a better talisman, to make that fight easier,
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big thing, I try to be careful with is, I very much don't like the boss fights, particularly I think the only one I liked the boss fights in were actually Bloodborne.
Mm-hmm.
And that was specifically in the Chalice dungeons. And so I tend to be very careful not to, like, force myself into a situation where the boss fight is the only thing left, and then I get burnt out. Does that make sense?
Like I said, I've not finished the game. I have never been in a situation where I felt like that was the case for me. There are.
Okay, that's good. Because this is definitely, like, definitely 3 had that.
Yes. Yeah. Will there be a mandatory boss that you have to take down in order to beat the game? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Especially towards the end. But, like, as you uncover stuff, there are just kind of always going to be options for you. Is the sense that you get. And, you know, to give you like an indication, I'm like 40 hours in, and, you know, I feel like I've barely scratched the surface.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's definitely a very large game. Something I'd kind of be interested to see is, I remember, and part of this is Majora's Mask, but I remember some statistic that, like, in Majora's Mask, before fighting the first boss, you can have something like, I don't know, like 20-something heart containers or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's sort of a similar mechanic here where, you know, you can get a lot of freaking stuff before you have to really, like, commit to any of the bosses or anything.
Yeah.
So I'm interested. I'm hoping at some point someone does, you know, crunches the numbers of, like, exactly how many, I don't know what they even call them, Estus flasks, in effect, you can get and things like that.
So I was under the impression that, like, when you say there's, like, a lot to do on the maps, that it was just, like, bosses in every direction, or it's, like, you walk into this building, there's a boss, or you go around this field and there's a boss, but that's not the case, or?
No. Like, there are field bosses. You know, that may pop up like on the road, from somewhere, or like bosses who will be in some above ground ruins. And like, you'll go to mini dungeons that feel like, more heavily authored Chalice dungeons to a degree. Like they're smaller. And each of them has like their own little hook, but you're going to get into those dungeons and there will be a boss at the end of it. But like those, you know, are kind of chumps compared to the bosses in the legacy dungeons, you know, the gigantic, you know, Stormveil Castle, like what David just got into is considered a legacy dungeon. So,
okay.
Right.
I've seen the boss that he's talking about, the first one, because like every Twitch streamer has streamed beating that or playing that, you know, but
I would say in some ways I would almost describe what they have as like the inverse Chalice dungeon, by which I mean, one of the big things with the Chalice dungeons is it's like, this was the part of Bloodborne where it's not part of the quote-unquote actual game, so we don't have to make it fair.
Okay.
You know, we can just make it as arbitrarily difficult or, you know, unfair or cheap as we want. Whereas I feel like there's almost the inverse here of like, there's all these field bosses, and it almost seems like for a lot of them, the kind of the feeling is like, we don't, because these are just, we're making a ton of these and there's a bunch of different things for you to experience, we're not really going to try to keep you from cheesing them.
Yeah.
So like a lot of these field bosses, like if you want to, you can like fight them on your horse, and that makes the fight dramatically easier, sometimes almost trivially so.
Yeah.
And but it's like, you know, the point, you know, their point was never to gate you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, a concept that we talk about a lot, or at least that I talk about, you know, is like the concept of like a difficulty ceiling and a difficulty floor. And mm-hmm. I think that, like, you know, set the difficulty ceiling as high as you want. Give me control over the floor,
right, exactly.
You know, which is to say that, like, in that situation, you have a field boss that's kind of chasing you down. You could decide to make it trivial by fighting it on horseback or by using, you know, throwables that will give it a status effect, you know, that will effectively kill it for you, you know, any number of things like that. Like, you could do that. And if you say, oh, that's way too easy, well, just don't do it that way. Fight it on foot. Fight it with the broken sword hilt. Fight it.
Yeah.
You know, like there are any number of ways, you know, it's.
Fight it as a wretch.
Yeah. Fight it as the depraved, you know, like just, you know, do a soul level one or whatever they call it. There are any numbers of ways to do that. And it, like, can still be satisfying. Go ahead. No.
The whole cool thing about video games is agency.
Yeah.
Right.
And
one of the cool things with that, and I forget, someone in the Slack said this, so like I forget who, but was kind of saying they felt like a lot of the mechanics they added to this game were kind of showing the middle finger to people that said, like, there is a quote-unquote right way to play Dark Souls.
Because they gave you so many different ways to play it.
Right, and I feel like a lot of the ways that always existed, but in some ways kind of weren't first-class citizens, are now. So, for example, like, straight-up regular shielding, not like parry shielding, mm-hmm. now has a mechanic to open up, like, critical hit backstab type things.
Yeah, the guard counter.
Oh, that's cool.
It's so good.
Yeah. Similarly, ranged weapons seem much more viable as like a primary or at least main form of offense than they have in previous games.
Mm-hmm.
The other big thing is you can now basically unlock as effectively as loot the NPC summons.
Yep.
And so whereas like the conventional summons that are like people still exist, these are more like they're modeled after the various monsters, at least the ones I've seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mutually exclusive, but they also you can only they don't take any resource to summon anymore. So you can only summon them certain locations, but most major fights are there, so you can just basically summon them wherever you want.
Mm-hmm. So you can summon them in the overworld. Like you do not have to just like summon them out in the you know, like right outside of the door to a boss arena. Like if there is a tough, you know, like a tough set of ruins you're trying to clear, you know, where you know there's going to be a pickup at the center of it. You get those bad boys out, and you know, it will fight alongside you, or in some cases fight for you, or draw attention of those guys while you fight these guys. Yeah,
there's also a lot of quality of life improvements. You can anytime you're not in combat, you can teleport to any bonfire, which are now what, Lost Glory or something?
Lost Grace.
Lost Grace.
I will never stop calling them bonfires. I've been calling them bonfires for coming up on 10 years now. So
yeah. So you can now basically from any point, almost except for actually in dungeons, teleport to bonfires when you're out of combat and mm-hmm. you keep all your souls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, they've introduced, I forget what they are called, but basically like pseudo bonfires that if you die when you're nearby, you can respawn at one of them instead of a bonfire.
Yeah.
And so the end result is like they put them out front of a bunch of boss fights where they, for some reason, they didn't want to actually put a bonfire.
Yeah.
So yeah, all sorts of, there's actually a map.
Yeah, it's a good map too.
Yeah, it is. So the main thing, the one thing I'm a little worried about, and I'd be interested to hear if this kind of changes, but so far it seems like the game's somewhat more light on story than I'm used to in a Souls game.
So the early going is definitely a little bit lighter.
Okay. Like, I've noticed it seems like a lot of the item descriptions are much less evocative. Although that could just be because there's a lot more items.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good stuff there. But for me, like, it's also just a matter of, I need context for this.
Yeah, that's true. So, it's, I'm enjoying it overall. I really like the enemy design of Stormwind Castle or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the enemy design, like all around, is amazing. They brought back, I mean, tons of goofy stuff. Enemy designs. I mean, like, I'm talking like Kingsfield goofy. Like, they're going way back. They're not afraid to have, you know, the deadly enemies that can kill you in one shot just be total dipshits.
Yeah. I think the weirdest thing I've seen is there's a crafting system. So they've got the open world, like collect herbs and stuff like that. It's mostly a good thing because it basically means that, like, you don't really have to scrounge for consumables. If you just vaguely pick up things as you go, you can just craft what you need.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the things is, like, hunting animals, and one of the sheep species, their survival mechanism is just to, like, tuck and start doing somersaults.
Yep.
It's a Wooloo!
People love the wheel sheep.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of weird stuff. The birds are dicks.
Yeah, that's that is definitely an impression. That is the meme. I think it was Will from Everything to Guppy. He tweeted like, if I see a dragon on the horizon, no problem, bring it on, fucker. If I hear a bird, then I immediately run for cover.
Yeah. Although, strangely enough, probably the enemy I hate the most are dragonflies.
Oh, yeah.
They deal virtually no damage. Except that, like, I'm fairly certain they do because they attack you. Like, I'm not even completely sure that I've ever been able to tell that they dealt damage.
Mm-hmm.
However, they do attack you, and they are crazy hard to hit.
Yes, it's like the mosquitoes in Blighttown, except they don't poison you. At least, none of the ones that I have encountered yet poison you. It's important to be precise.
I think my favorite message I've seen so far is. And I really hope this was, like, actually a newbie and not just someone being dumb. In my head canon, it was. Message next to some bog, like, wasn't expecting bog. It's like, this is a Soulsborne game. Like, and you really should have expected this.
And prior to the game coming out, Miyazaki even, like, did an interview where he said, like, oh man, we've got so many poison swamps in this bad boy.
Yeah, his I love just some of his statements are hilarious.
Yeah, seems like a good guy.
Yeah he does. I don't want to go on too far long, especially because, you know, if you want to hear about this, you should listen to Bonfireside Chats. But it is a good game for good people.
Yeah, I'm happy you're enjoying it, you know, because as I was playing it, I was thinking, like, David doesn't really care for Souls bosses. And this would be a good game for him because this is the most, like, non-boss content to boss content. That is in a Souls game, like, not just because it's open world and there's, like, lots of space. It's just there's a lot to do that is not, you know, banging your head against a boss until it falls down so you can bang your head against the next one. So
yeah, and there's also a ton of just like where there are difficult enemies, just a lot of fucking with them.
Oh yeah,
like I very much enjoy you know, seeing the bridge dragon, because there were, just like swamps, there will always be a bridge dragon, and just being like, oh wait, I have a super fast horse.
Just try and catch me.
So, yeah. Yep.
Nice. That all you got?
That is all I got.
Cool. Let's see. I want to hear what you've been playing, Ben.
All right, I got some more like non-video game content, or I don't know, it's meta video game content. Okay. I wanted to talk about Storybook Brawl.
Did that tournament.
Yeah, so I made Mythic in January. So at the end of February, they have a tournament for everybody who made Mythic the previous month. And it was over the weekend on a Saturday. It was like 800 people who qualified and signed up for it. And so I just kind of wanted to briefly describe like the behind the scenes and kind of like what went on, because it was kind of fun. So the idea is everybody plays like 6 rounds of Storybook Brawl. Each game you're in a lobby of 8 people, and basically you get points for where you place in the lobby for each game that you play, and then you need to make a certain number of points to qualify to go on to the next day. And so the way it works, I wrote this out in chat because it's easier to read than it is to like hear, but like basically the way it works is it's kind of like reverse, like 8 points for first and 1 point for eighth, but then you get an extra point if you make it in the top half, and then you get an extra point if you place in first, is essentially how the points work. And so if you get first place, you get 10 points, and it kind of decreases from there, and then you need to get 40 points over 6 games to qualify for the day 2. And so, like, you either need to get first in 4 games or get second in 5 games, that sort of thing. So it's kind of, it's a little bit strict. Basically, the way it shakes out is it's like 1 in 8 people will move on from day 1 to day 2. So, and it was also early since I was on West Coast time. I think it was like, well, quote unquote early, like it was at 10 a.m. and you have to sign in like 15 minutes ahead of time. The cool thing about it is it's like completely run on Discord, and they use like a heavy use of like bots to set everything up and tear everything down and communicate. But it was like very smoothly organized. Like, so the idea is they do a check-in 15 minutes before. They just ask you to respond like with an emote to the message to check in with just like a check mark. Hmm. Everybody does that. And then they pair people off in flights. So each game you do, it's a random batch of 8 people. So it's like mixed up. You don't stay with the same 8 people or anything like that. They'll create a Discord text room specifically for you. They'll pick a random person. They're the person who creates a lobby. You can play this game with your friends, which has always like been a feature of the game, but that's how they're using it for the tournament, is like you just create a lobby and you give it a name, and then other people can join that named lobby and they'll join your game, and then you can start. The one person who's randomly chosen, just make sure that's the 8 people who are in the chat room or the 8 people who are in the game before they start it. Mm-hmm. And then you record your results through a bot, and that like will categorize everything, but you just give it a command to do that. Mm-hmm. And you just do that 6 times, and then at the end of the day, then you figure out if you go on or not. The other thing that happens is you can drop at any time. So like if you scrub out and get like 2 eighth place finishes in a row, you can just do like exclamation point drop, and then the bot will automatically deregister you, and you won't be in any of the future lobbies. So all that stuff was super smooth. First game I played, I got 7th place. That was about what I was expecting, since it was like, you know, it's like all people are pretty good. It's like the top 800 people in the game. So, but then second game, I got the heroes like Peter Pan, and I got Hatball, which I think I mentioned on the podcast before, is like being a treasure combo you can get where spells are really cheap and you can cast them over and over again if you get both those artifacts. Mm-hmm. So I got that, and I got first place in my second game. So I had, I think, 12 points. And then the third game, I got 4th place. So I was at 18 points out of 40 that I needed to get halfway there. So I was like kind of on the right track towards possibly qualifying. So I was a little bit excited. And I was like live texting with one of my friends who also like plays the games and watches. And so I was kind of like updating him on my choices and stuff like that. And I was streaming it on Discord so he could watch it. And then I got 2nd place the next game. With the Horde Dragon, I forget what the creatures that I had. The next game I did Royals and also got 2nd place. And so at that point, I just needed to get 4th or above in the last game.
Nerve-wracking.
Yeah, and so for the last game, I had my hero selection. I purposely picked, there's one that's like an animal-based hero where it gives you an option of buying an animal in the market every round that has a +1/+1. But the reason why you pick that is it's a very consistent type hero. Like, you know, you're guaranteed to get like a certain creatures of a certain type, you know, every round. And so it's good for like kind of getting a consistent, you might not get first. It might not be like breakaway or whatever, but it's like consistent. So that's why I went for it. Anyway, I got first place for my last game. So I qualified for day two, which was sweet. And so I was really, yeah, I was just like really excited about that. And then the next day two, I played and I got 5th place, then 6th place, then 7th place, and then I dropped. So I completely scrubbed out day two, but I was okay with that because like at that point you were playing with 100 people. These are like streamers that I watch who I was playing against. Like literally the last game that I got knocked out by, I was one of the streamers that I watch most frequently. So I was just really happy. I was happy to be there, as they say. And then they gave they awarded everyone who got to day two like $20 of their in-game currency and stuff. So
nice.
Yeah, so it was just like a really nice experience overall. It was like really well organized and stuff. And it just shows like, yeah, it's not hard to run like a video game tournament if you use this type of technology and stuff like that. I imagine they've like worked kinks out since they've done this like 5 or 6 times now. And even people were commenting like, oh yeah, this has been the smoothest one yet. So
nice.
But yeah, it's really cool. It was a cool experience. It felt like I used to do math competitions when I was in like middle school or high school. It reminded me of that, where it's like you're doing something you're really familiar with, but you feel this like weird amount of pressure, you know, and like I'm not used to like competing or doing things competitively like that or whatever. So it was.
Are there any turns that you look at in retrospect and you're like, oh man, I wish I could get that back, or like, oh, if only I'd made this different decision, or you're like, I choked that, or
well, I'm not sure. I haven't replayed the day two as much, just because I kind of gave up hope quickly, I guess. But the day one, I think things just came together pretty consistently. So and that's the thing, is it's not like it was an abundance of skill. Like, to a certain degree, there's a lot of luck involved, where it's like you happen to get the right treasure at the right time, you know, whereas it, you know, you could just have easily have like been going for a certain thing and just been like just missed out on like by the RNG or whatever and just been screwed over. So like I think a lot of it is luck based. I mean, definitely other streamers that I watched didn't make it today too, who are certainly better players than I am, so there is definitely a luck element. But yeah, so there wasn't, especially with day one, there wasn't much of the focusing on I should have done this, because a lot of the stuff came together. And I think the thing that was kind of weird is it was making much more conservative decisions, because you're not going for first place necessarily. You're going for let's not get 8th place, you know. So like,
yeah, the not worst.
Yeah, so like let's make some pretty consistent. Like, I'll give you an example. There's one hero where their ability is if you get 3 good characters, all of your characters get like +2 health. And if you have 3 evil characters, all of your characters get +2 attack. It's something where it's not like you're not going to get like a blowout like combo or anything, but it's really strong early on because it's pretty, it doesn't matter what strategy you're going for. You can pick up good and bad characters all over the place. And so it's something that I picked that hero like 2 or 3 times, I think, between day one and day two, just because you're guaranteed to at least make it in the middle with that, because you'll have a really strong like early game, and then maybe you can figure out a strategy from there. But yeah, anyway, so that was fun. And then after that, I made Mythic again for February. And I think the strategy of doing that is there's like 2 or 3 days between the end of the month and like the tournament, and most of the streamers are just like done after the monthly challenge. So it's like, it's pretty easy to like level up on the, like in that 2 or 3 day window. And so that's kind of what I banked on. So, but anyway, that was kind of fun. And
more max minning from Ben.
Yeah. It's, hey, you just need to make the 4,000 rank. You don't need to be in the 5,000 or the 6,000s, like the best players.
You know what they say, 4,000 rank gets a degree.
Gets to spend their weekend doing this for $20.
Yeah, so sorry about talking about this on length. It was just a very novel experience for me.
No,
so
no,
that's cool to hear. Really
it's cool to hear how it's run. Like, it makes sense in a world of It makes sense in a world with Discord that they would use Discord to, you know, to make that happen. But mm-hmm. it's, you know, still neat to hear that it was like a good experience and that they've got it on lockdown and that like this is a game that has like, you know, a strong enough and well supported enough community to make this happen every month.
Yeah.
I feel like the poetic take is they use Discord to create order.
Very good.
It was very impressive. Like so every lobby that you play in, they automatically will have a bot create like rooms for everybody and will move you like into it, like text chat rooms. And they'll tear them down at the end after everyone reports too. And they have like a bot auto update, like, hey, there's this many like pods open, and it'll update the message like every 5 minutes or something like that. And the one part that was really nerve wracking is they will randomly choose one person and they will move you to a voice channel and they ask you to share your screen and they do commentary Ooh. Based on your decisions. And they follow you until you either die or win. That would have been not fun if I was selected for that, but thankfully I was not. So, yes. but yeah, anyway. So that was like the big video game experience I had. At least the like highlight or whatever. Outside of that, I've been playing a shit ton of Valheim, guys. I think I've put 84 hours into it. So I think I was just starting, or I was getting into it like a couple weeks ago, or I forget how far, but I don't know if I mentioned this part or not, is we got a server with a couple of my friends, and so we're all playing on the same world, and anyone can like log in at any time. I think we've discovered every biome that exists in the game. One of my friends is like on the last one and he's like, I think two levels ahead of where I am. I'm just getting into the fourth biome, and starting to like go through that, the game. Yeah. So I'm definitely enjoying the game. I think once I kind of like sunk my teeth into the building mechanics, I really like that. The building system is like as good or better than Subnautica, which was kind of like the bar for me for like really enjoyable like base building mechanics in a game. This like scratches a weird itch of it being very like rustic, Viking-y, like fantasy, but usually I'm not like as into fantasy as much as like sci-fi, so it was mm-hmm. kind of weird for me to latch onto this. The choice of like what you can build and how it's all integrated is all like really fits well together. Sorry, you were gonna ask a question.
No, last time you said like it's easy to make stuff that looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, like, not saying you couldn't make stuff that looked good in a different game that, you know, if you had the time and, you know, resources and stuff, but like that makes it sound really satisfying that it's not just like, yeah, I made something functional, it looks like shit, I prop myself up a little shack where I could be bad at building without being rained on, but the fact that they make it so you can, you know, roll like that and end up with something screenshot worthy, not that you'd even take a screenshot, seems cool and good.
Yeah. And there's like an abundance of, kind of strategies you can go into building kind of max min other things, not to overuse that word, but, So I included a screenshot of the base that I have. One of the things I did is like, so there's a hoe that you can have in the game where you can like level out ground, and kind of, or you can raise ground and stuff to your liking. You can use that to kind of make farms and kind of like make your base on a level surface, which has its own benefits. But one of the things you can do with this to cheese out is you can lift the ground up like, I don't know, 10 or 20 feet mm-hmm. and you do that in a circle around your base and then
instant wall.
Yeah. And so nothing without wings can get into your base and attack it. And so I included a screenshot of like trolls just like hanging out outside of my base, but not being able to like go in and attack it, which was
Is there a rock falling on one of them? What is that?
No, I think one of them has like a club and it's clipping through the other's head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought this was a moments before disaster shot here.
I mean, kind of. You got a club going through your head, it's probably not great. But, so that was something that's fun. Yeah, so I made, like, we have our own, like, town with, like, the three or four people that are on the server, but then I made, like, kind of my personal spot, kind of, like, there's like some other aesthetics you can do where it's like the way you build like workbenches and like forges, there's like upgrades to those, but they kind of take up a lot of space and they have to be adjacent. But there's like a strategy where you can just like dig out a basement or like make a first floor and just put all those like tangential things like on the first floor underneath where it is on the second floor. So like you have this like very clean like room that has all your things that are like functional, and then like all this clutter is like out of the way. And I don't know, this sounds weird, maybe like going too far in the weeds about it, but like there's a lot of cool strategies to make it look really good. I don't have more screenshots, otherwise I'd share them with you, but like some very aesthetically pleasing like buildings. I have like, I made a circular building which I was really happy with. It has like four turrets pointing out in the kind of four cardinal directions on each side. I'm expanding it now as like the current project that I'm doing, as it's like basically the size of a circle before. It's going to be like the size of like two circles now, like a MasterCard or a Visa logo. Mm-hmm. And then that second circle is going to be like more like farmland space that you can grow vegetables in. So I think kind of the other skills that I've kind of mastered is like how to get food production and like how to make recipes for food, because that's kind of like the lifeblood of the game, is like you need to be able to make higher level type food because that gives you more health and stamina, and that allows you to go in kind of the more advanced biomes and not like insta die when you fight people. Mm-hmm. And then you can do that long enough that you can get the like supplies from that area, and then you can craft higher level armor so that you can completely be safe in that area and then move on to the next area. So from that standpoint, it's like really well designed game in the sense that like, you know, for each biome, it's basically like the supplies you get from that biome will make you proficient in that biome. And they can kind of tightly control that, right? Like, okay, if there's like snozzberries in this biome, we can make snozzberry jam that, you know, like we'll give you to this level, you know? And so it's like easy for them to design it in a way where I'm trying to think of the way to put it, is like design the difficulty so that it's, you know, it'll be easy for you in the end and it'll be hard for you in the next biome at the beginning. Yeah. So, so it's a good flow. I'm sure I'll probably peter out of this in maybe a couple weeks or so, but I'm definitely enjoying it for now. So yeah.
Nice. I mean, even if you peter out in a couple of weeks, you still put 84 hours into it in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I just love, Ben, that the fun you had with your video games was the tournament organization aspects of Storybook Brawl and the base layout aspects of Valheim.
Yeah, I need to get better at fighting. Like right now, I have a spear and I just like stab people with the spear till they die. But I haven't really invested in much. I need to get like a shield so I can actually like parry and block and stuff. I haven't really learned to do that yet. So,
but you haven't figured out what kind of room you would want to keep your shields in and where it should be in the order of the armory yet. So it's just not worth
doing. You're saying this like it's a joke, but I believe that is a real concern. So I don't know how to handle this disrespect.
They did add an armor stand item where you can put like your pieces of your armor on it. It's like a dump.
Of course,
to, like, showcase it off.
Why else would you have armor?
Wait, what?
Why else would you have armor without that?
Yeah,
gotta have that fashion. Fashion souls.
Yeah.
Fashion.
Fashionheim.
I also sailed a boat by myself, which was a harrowing experience, probably because of Dennis's story. With all the resources on it.
As long as you didn't pick up too much copper, you're good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was even like a serpent pursuing me in the ocean, but I was able to just outrun it and ignore it. But yeah. But
good thing the wind was on your side.
It was, yeah, it very much was.
I think that's what's so stressful about it, is like at any moment the wind could change and then you're just screwed.
Yeah. Then it's like find shore quick. Mm-hmm. But yep. Nice. That's all I got.
It sounds like you've been busy. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I finished a big one. I finished The Last of Us 2.
Ooh.
Since we last recorded. So, Ben, I know you've been itching to talk about this. And I mean, man, that game, just from a storytelling and thought-provoking standpoint, is a masterpiece.
Yeah, so... what's the spoilers on this game, or like what's the statute of limitations?
I've beat it. I don't care now. So
I haven't
anarchy.
I haven't beaten it, but I intend to.
Okay. Have you played any of it, or?
I mean, I played like the opening hour. So like I have met and done a few of the tutorial things with a second character.
So
I don't think it's, not spoil anything. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say you spend a significant amount of the game playing as the antagonist. And I'm not sure which part of the game that is.
Right.
Well, I mean, everyone in the game is both a protagonist and an antagonist, if you know what I mean.
They do that extremely well. And everyone that you encounter, there's just so much thought and depth put into, like, here's why this person is a total piece of shit. Here's why this person, like, you completely understand and see as the good guy. And it's like, I finished the game and I you know, was kind of watching the end of it. I was like, this game was a meditation on what happens when you feel like you need to make a person suffer more than the suffering they've caused.
Yeah.
Like that is what the game lays out in front of you and allows you to experience and take part in. And I think the thing I'm most impressed about the story is their restraint in not getting preachy or not kind of coming down with instructions on how you should feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not to say they do like both sides-erism or anything like that. It's just Naughty Dog does such a good job portraying people as deeply human. And like you might hate what they've done. You're going to hate what they've done. This game is about doing awful, awful things. But you can always understand where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. It's The Last of Us. Oops, all Joels.
Yes. That is absolutely true.
And I mean, just based on your description, right? Because I feel pretty solid on my read about the quality of character that Joel evinces, right? But they're playing in a space of ambiguity to the point where like somebody could have a valid read that is contra to mine, right? So when I say that, you know, I have no idea what happens to Joel in this game, and I kind of don't want to hear it here. I'd like to see it. The fact that they're leaning into that with a specific, you know, if the first game was partially about trying to not lose something that you feel represents you lost something that represents something you lost before. Be that civilization or your daughter, this one, you know, being about revenge in a way that is, you know, maybe a little bit more nuanced than, you know, if you set out for revenge, be sure to dig two graves, one for them and one for you.
Yeah, it is. They do a really good job of making
a lot of graves.
Oh, so many graves. So many graves. and I talked about, you know, when I had my first impressions of the game, how impressed I was that you could sneak through stuff if you wanted to. And I think the game retains a lot of that openness to where even in like the final areas or in the most difficult areas, I never felt like I was required to sweep it to move on.
Yeah.
And there were still sections where I reached a point of like, all right, fuck this place. Like I see my way out and I'm taking it.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually like the really, really, gratifying to like dash off, there's guns firing from behind you and you kind of burst through a door, lock it behind you and feel like you got away with something. Like they make that satisfying, they make that feel you know, if you're playing as director, they make that feel like a very valid choice.
Yeah.
The other thing they nail in this game, and it doesn't really come out until the later portions, are boss fights. There's probably two or three encounters that I would really characterize as a boss fight. And, you know, if this game did health bars, there would be a giant health bar, at the top of the screen kind of boss fights. And it is, some of the most intense, rewarding encounters that I've had in games, on par with any, and you know, pick your game that has great boss fights. This is one of them. I will not spoil some stuff that I was thinking about talking about, Cole, knowing you still mean to work your way through it, but there is a section of this game, Cole, that is custom designed for you.
Ooh.
That I cannot wait for you to get through. I'm not even going to say why, just, whenever you get there, you know, years in the future, you're going to know. You're going to finish a boss fight and go, oh my God, this whole section was a love song to me personally.
Yeah.
So the boss fights are excellent. They do a great job also doing duels where, you know, it's a one up and you feel like you're evenly matched with an opponent. Duels that use all of the stealth and even crafting mechanics as well as the combat mechanics.
I mean, the original Last of Us only had one boss fight, if I recall correctly. And if you don't count,
gymnasium.
Well, I mean, I was thinking of, you know, the cannibal, mm-hmm. but,
tank, I feel like they had a few boss fights.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you don't count the tanks, and I'm only discounting those because those aren't so much like they're set pieces, but they pop up a mm-hmm. couple of times. Like that is like it feels like a mini boss variety of an enemy, that shows up.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what I was going to say. Oh yes, so as a sequel to a game that had, you know, what felt to me like one boss fight, hearing that they do several duels and that they're not just the fucking pits sounds good to me.
Yeah, and overall the gameplay does a really good job kind of stretching to the edges of all its various facets. So like I said, crafting stuff, stealth stuff, overt combat stuff, you know, vehicle related stuff. It kind of everything gets its chance to shine and kind of prove out that, like, you know, it deserves to be there. Mm-hmm. And you know, does well in the spotlight. Ben, I don't know if you can think of any of the systems of the game that felt like, they could have polished that a bit more.
One of the things I thought was so good is like how well integrated it is. Like none of those things overshadow like the environment you're in and like the narrative, you know? So it's like, even if you have like a vehicle or like boss thing or whatever, it's like, it doesn't feel like it's not like, maybe like in Metal Gear where it's like fairly clearly like, okay, now this is like a boss thing that you're going to just like focus on this. It's like much more integrated in the environment where it's like, oh yeah, like we've spent like the last like hour kind of pursuing this person and now like we're fighting this, you know, like it's, it mm-hmm. just feels much more seamless and much more like a amusement ride, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing I was going to draw attention to, yeah, like the part that is like crazy is like the quality is so high and this is such a long game where it's like, it's consistently like good quality, like the art design of all the settings you're in, like all the way through, and it's like, yeah, so it's like I would expect this quality to be like maybe a 10-hour game or something and it would be like a masterpiece game of the year, but the fact that it's like four times that length and it maintains that quality, and like there's more like cinematic stuff to it in the sense that like there's a lot of symbolism in the environments they choose. Without saying anything about the ending or spoiling anything about the ending has very like cinematic feel to it where it's like a sort of payoff that you would see in a movie, but it's in a video game. Mm-hmm. It makes me want to play it again because
just play it on with like the ultra hard no HUD system and just ruin it for yourself.
That breaks immersion for me.
Yeah, I've thought of a system that they need to work on.
Okay.
And it is the balance system when you're walking across a thin platform. Mm-hmm. So again, without saying anything, but that's just every game has that, right? Hey, I got to walk across this rail.
I don't like
and
it.
I'm gonna lean side to side and like move the left stick so you don't fall. I could never find the sweet spot of like I always was surprised that I fell. Like I was like, I didn't know I was anywhere near close to falling. It just felt like the game was suddenly like, nope, that's it. It's I had no the visual feedback, the haptic feedback, all of that kind of failed me on those. And there's sections where it feels very important to not screw that up, because it being up high counts at places. That's the I don't know how to I'll back away from
it's
that
bad
one.
To fall off things.
It's bad to fall off things, yeah. And especially bad for other reasons. And to just, you talk about immersion breaking stuff, to have to do a section, you know, 3, 4, 5 times because yes. keep on falling at a climactic moment is really annoying. And then it undermines when they try to do other interesting things. So it just, that feedback visually could have been a lot more well defined, so that you don't interrupt your flow.
Man,
the one thing I guess I'm missing from this game is the multiplayer. I love the multiplayer of The Last of Us.
You did. You had like a crew you rolled with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it was one of the only multiplayer games where randos on voice chat were like consistently helpful and focused, mm-hmm. because it was such an advantage to do so.
Yeah,
so there might be a correlation with like not as many people playing it and people being nicer on it. That's why it got scrapped.
yeah, that might be true.
In order for multiplayer to be successful, it has to be big enough that playing it is a horrible, horrible experience.
Yeah,
that's right. Steve Rocket League.
Yeah.
Cole, do you know the setting of the game?
You start in Jackson, and then you go up to Seattle.
Okay, yeah. I didn't want to spoil this, so Seattle, the way they handle Seattle, like the setting of it, is so well done as well. Like it pays like such good respect to all the different neighborhoods that you're in when you're there. And yeah, that part's just very, very impressive.
Well, you literally in the small section where you were spectating me were like, oh yeah, that stand is a block from my house.
Yeah. They show a dry cleaner that's near in my neighborhood. Yeah. Like it was even down to like fall where I'm like, okay, you would be on this road right now and is curved the same way that road is. So like this checks out. And then you took a right, and it's like, that's Melrose, and that overlooks the highway, and that does check out. That looks good, you know?
That's great.
That's cool that you got to have that experience.
Yeah.
I don't remember the Space Needle being on an island. Did I miss something?
I don't remember that either. Maybe it's like Escape from LA, dude. Maybe that part of the land just drifts off into the Puget Sound.
Yeah.
I also could have just misunderstood where the landmarks were. Like maybe I was just using it to orient myself and it wasn't supposed to be on the place I was. I don't know. But yeah,
I don't even remember to what degree they showed Space Needle in the game. So I'd need to choose to see if that was the case. But
yeah. But The Last of Us 2 is, I'm very happy it was on my PS4 bucket list.
Yeah. And now it's off the list, or it's in the bucket. I'm not sure how this works.
Yeah. What is, I think the bucket is kicked now.
No, you kick the bucket. It's a bucket list because it's stuff bucket. You have to That's do right. before you That's kick right. the bucket. Yeah. Which is super dark.
Yeah. Is the list taped to the bucket then? I think that's.
No, I don't think.
This is shorter.
Yeah.
Mm.
The bucket is lighter.
You've crossed it off of your bucket list.
Oh my god, it's a bucket of lists.
No.
this is getting silly.
Yeah.
Another game on my bucket list. Any other questions about The Last of Us 2?
Are you going to play it again anytime soon? Or are you like good taking a break from it for a while?
Man, I need a lot of distance to just recover emotionally. Like it is a dark game and you watch really dark things front and center, and being a video game, you participate in them.
Yeah.
And you know, as much as I tried to like sneak around and avoid encounters where I didn't have to fight, like there were also sections where I saw red and like, you know, lots of people died.
Yeah.
So I think that is a game that you kind of got to go into, knowing and wanting that kind of really heavy experience, and they make it totally worth it. But I there's a good long time before I'm going to play it again.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool.
I wonder if I would go back around and play The Last of Us the first before I came back to part two. Cause it's been my memory of that game is getting increasingly hazy as well. And I wonder if some things that are explored in 2 would cast 1 in a different light.
It still, I mean, it holds up. We played it for WoF, I think, in 2020, 2021, one of those. God help me.
2020 is a good year to play The Last of Us.
Yeah.
You know what? They didn't murder enough people.
It's bad when the game starts to look pretty optimistic.
Yeah.
Society looks pretty good.
Last of Us 2 came out kind of in the middle of the pandemic as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Other bucket list game that I have started is Nier Automata.
Oh shit. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. And one, you were talking about just how much intention goes into the places in The Last of Us. You know, Nier is also in kind of this post-apocalypse. And granted, you are interacting with the world in a different way. You're like leaping across buildings, whereas The Last of Us, the entirety of a whole section of the game is just trying to get through one building, right? Mm-hmm. But it really struck me when I started Nier just how empty it felt in relation to. I just spent 80 hours or, you know, however many hours crawling through these incredibly dense environments where you could look at any shelf and there's a personal story and pictures and every sound matters. And then, you know, you boot up Nier and it's just like YOLO.
Is it like Mirror's Edge where you're just seeing the tops of buildings all the time or?
Yeah, I mean, all the buildings are kind of bombed out husks. And like I said, you're a super soldier android. And so you can jump across streets from building to building with ease, and you know you're fighting things that are literally the size of skyscrapers. So the game is just on a different scale.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know that is not a detriment, but for the small sections where you are in an enclosed space, it just really pressed on me how empty that space was, in a way that I don't think would have happened had I not just played The Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
And I feel like, am I not correct? You're fighting things the size of skyscrapers when you're not fighting the android robot.
Yes.
There's the standard machine that is not a
the mascot of Android phones. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking too much about like the distinctions. I mean, the entire game is kind of about this, the distinctions between humans, androids, and those things you're fighting, or like, yep. like a good portion of it. Yeah.
The machines versus the androids and the, it is loves to wax poetic on that front.
Yeah.
And I'm early in the game, but it already kind of has that sci-fi syndrome of world building where they introduce the world the way it is almost exclusively to show you how it's not actually that way.
Yeah.
if that kind of flows where it's like, hey, this is a society where XYZ is the norm. Oh wait, XYZ was a lie all along. and so there's just like almost every facet that they've introduced has been subverted in that way, to the point that you almost expect it. And it's like, okay, I assume that everything I meet or interact with is going to have something else going on.
First it's one way, then it's the opposite. We all understand.
Yes. but the game is charming as all get out. And I know it's been talked about on this show. So I went in expecting a certain level of tomfoolery knew that it was going to do like multiple endings and there was going to be some of this like, you know, this game goes places, this game is going to go off the rails in a thousand different ways, but I don't think I was prepared for just how much it does that with every facet of the game, right down to like I didn't even know, like, you boot up the game and it's like, oh, I'm playing a twin stick shooter. Mm-hmm. That, okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Now it's an R type game, and now it's, you know, now it's an Devil May Cry game, and now it's, and they just like, it keeps on flipping through genres. Now it's a 2D side scrolling platformer. and, you know, that is really disorienting in a way. Mm-hmm. But none of it has been so difficult that it's been frustrating.
Yeah.
And it's just really fun to encounter a game on those terms where it's like, I don't have any idea what to expect. And it's kind of conditioning me to just expect something crazy at every turn.
Yeah. It's playful in that way.
Yes. And playful is a great word for this game. Like it is charming. It would charm my pants off if my character had any pants.
Yeah. Yeah.
hopefully this isn't too spoilery, but the one reveal, the first time you like go out to find the machines, the nature of the location that you find them and what's going on there is just
my jaw dropped. It took my breath away.
You're playing a dream.
I didn't expect something that whimsical.
Yes.
So how far are you into the game? Are you?
I just did the huge twin stick shooter section where you fight the giant robot that comes from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
The ancient giant robot that comes from the sea.
Yeah.
And that's probably where my one gripe is so far is the twin stick shooter sections, especially the ones that are positioned as boss fights, never lean hard enough into the bullet hell to be interesting.
Yeah.
And significant portions of the boss that I just played, that was that format, like you could kind of pick a spot at the screen and fire at the target and you didn't have to move. Like they were putting out lots of bullets, but there weren't enough bullets that you couldn't shoot down. That there were just lanes where you could just sit still. And literally it was like, I'm just sitting here and waiting for a health bar to go down. I'm not doing anything interesting.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think, you know, the health bars could have been trimmed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, it's the game. If you don't like that, don't worry. You're going to be on and doing something else crazy in a couple seconds anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm still early, and the game is charming as all get out. All the little vignettes and stories of the side quests are fun.
Yeah.
It is getting kind of funny that the main characters are still struggling to grasp the idea that the machines are not mindless killing machines. Like there's still regular dialogue of like, wait a second, they said what? But aren't they just mindless killing machines? It's like, dog, you were hanging out in like a village with them,
yeah,
chatting about existential questions. Like, how is this a surprise now? that point is hammered home a little heavy.
Yeah.
It all comes with the territory.
To set your expectations as you're playing, you're going to see credits, and things that are called the endings are not really endings. It's kind of just like chapter breaks, you know?
So, I got credits for eating a fish.
Like, yes. Yeah.
Not in-game credits to spend. I got end credits for eating a fish.
You ate the wrong fish. I told you not to. So
that is true. That one is on me. But in my defense, the character that told me not to was named Jackass, so I feel like there's a little bit of a opposite day effect going on.
I figure like a jackass would know which fish is poisonous, because you know a jackass would try it and get real sick, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that would make sense.
Yeah.
That same jackass also takes you out into the field to do science and collect data by fighting and massacring robots. So that's entertaining as well. So that's been a lot of fun, and something I'm sure I'll give an update on as I get further into it. After that, I think I've got God of War on my bucket list.
Ooh.
Which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. And then I think Sekiro. And really, that's it.
Nice.
Yeah. Nier, I'm probably the least experienced in Nier of this group. Maybe Ben, I don't know if you've played it.
I have not played it yet, but you're making it sound pretty tempting. It's on my wish list. I'll put it that way.
Nice. Is that all you had?
Those are my two big ones. I am trying to stream Nier because I put up a vote on which of my bucket list games to play next, and mm-hmm. people recommended it. So you might be able to catch that and come say hi.
Where can people watch your streams?
Yeah, at or not at, but Deck of Wonders on Twitch.
Cool. Yeah, I don't have anything. It's just been Elden Ring. I guess I'll take this opportunity to direct people if they didn't listen to it. Jala and I last Friday we did a bonus level about the second Phoenix Wright game, and I've moved on to playing the third, which is much better. So, but this is not my first time going through it. I played and beat this game over a decade ago.
Did you guys record that before you started Elden Ring? I forget.
We recorded it. I think the week it was like a couple days before Elden Ring came out.
Okay, very cool.
Segment break.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, explain what's going on.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times you have that game that has really cool ideas, maybe if you're reading about it before launch, and then the ideas just aren't executed that well. Mm-hmm. But there's a nugget there that you would preserve if you could. So the question is, if you could give those ideas a second shot, either by doing a reboot of the game or just through a new game entirely, how would you do that?
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Greg, who writes... It's a small nitpick, but Squall's gunblade in Final Fantasy VIII has always bothered me. It's a really cool idea, being able to both slash and shoot. They make a huge deal in the game about this weapon being hard to train with, how skilled Squall has to be, etc. But he never shoots from the gun. What's the point in building it up and having this cool-looking sword with a gun built into it if he just slashes enemies to death all the time? And that's just one game where they do that to you, say, hey, this weapon slash item can do XYZ, and then all it really does is X. Don't mention something if it's not going to be used, folks. I don't know if they explain it in the game. I just always assumed that it fired, so it would fire a cartridge, and that would if you timed it while you were slashing, the expelled gases would cause more damage to them. Because they don't have a barrel, I never assumed that the gun blades were actually a projectile weapon.
So I thought you could like hold down a button to do extra damage or something with them.
It was like a Super Mario RPG or Paper Mario kind of thing, where it was just a an active time battle kind of thing. Like, okay, we're going to throw in a little timing element to make it so that this game isn't just tap attack, tap attack, tap attack.
Yeah, I always assumed that was the thing.
Yeah,
maybe they were just out of ammo.
Maybe
yeah. It's the entire shortage. Game.
He did so much training with the gunblade; he used all the bullets.
Yeah, there's your problem. Mm. let's see, David. What does Callum say?
Callum says not to navigate away from the page.
Okay.
Callum says extinction jumps out for me. Single agile warrior seeking no. Single there, fighting big things, attack on Titan style, seemed like it could be fun. It was awful. The controls felt terrible in the hand, the scenarios were not fun, and being the Giants didn't even feel that satisfying. I think it would need the gameplay entirely redone from the ground up. Not good at thinking of game design elements, but something more than... kill all the big things before they destroy too much.
Man, I forgot this game. Okay, there we go. Now I remember it. This is the Turtle Rock people, I think. Right? No? Mm-hmm. No, this is incorrect. Developed by Iron Galaxy. Yeah.
You're thinking of Evolve, which is going to be my answer.
Oh, sorry. I don't know this game. Weird.
Huh. There's so many Attack on Titan jokes I can make with this, but all of them make me feel bad.
Oh, and that's what you want a joke to do, is feel bad.
Speaking of feeling bad about something, okay. Ollie says, Spec Ops The Line.
Ooh.
I think it's a good game that could have been great. My biggest gripe is that one of the most important parts of the game, the white phosphorus scene, is later played as this big morale choice moment, but you never had a choice. You cannot progress further in the game without using it. And this is why I feel games have always faltered at a moral choice aspect in games by either never giving you a choice or making the choice work out better in the end. See Harvesting Little Sisters in BioShock.
Yeah, it's you know, with the latter one especially, if there is never a cost associated with making the morally correct choice, it is imparting the idea that values don't need to be costly.
Right.
See, the thing is, you just need to invest the souls when you take them in the short term, and then you get more than you would in the long term if you're good. You just have to be truly evil.
Well, I think it's the idea that good choices always have to be pragmatic in some way. Like, yeah. No one's brave enough to say that you make the right choice purely because it's the right choice and there's no reward.
I think Mass Effect got close to having it be like gray zones, as like, well, this is the good quote unquote thing, but it's going to have this like cost.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and I correct me if I'm wrong. I read Spec Ops: The Line as like the idea that there wasn't really a choice there and that you were on rails and kind of corralled into doing it was kind of played into the themes of the game, whether intentionally or not, but
they were, yeah. I mean, it's very explicitly your choice is to walk away. Your choice is to turn the game off. I think Ollie knows that because Ollie has played the game. I think Ollie might be rejecting that as a valid or meaningful choice for a game to force you to make, you know?
Yeah. In the context of it. Almost calling back to The Last of Us 2, I saw a lot of people mad saying like, oh, The Last of Us 2 is a game that's trying to make you feel bad for playing it. And yet, you know, that's, yeah, don't play this game is not necessarily an interesting choice. Yeah.
And it's not like Spec Ops: The Line was trying to say like, hey, this is a game about meaningful choices all the way through. Like, yeah. There is like a narrative they're trying to tell with it. So
yeah,
but I mean, I get what they're saying, where it's like you're put in a situation where you might not want to do something and you don't have the option to do that. And that can feel unpleasant.
Or yeah. It's hard to feel the character agonizing about that or relate to the character making a choice when like you don't have one.
Yeah.
Right.
I hate to be like digs up an old joke that he made kind of guy. One of the puns that I'm most proud of is when I called Spec Ops: The Line a worst person shooter.
You stands up both Spec Ops: The Line and that pun.
Let's see. That was Ben. Dennis, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says, "We Happy Few had a really good theme and trailers that made it look amazing. Then to have the game released to discover it is a survival game and full of bugs just killed it for me. I ended up trying it on Game Pass, and even though I found the story interesting, the systems caused me to bounce off."
They made so many strange choices with that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of my favorite things for our previous conversation or previous topic is that it's the only game I've seen that allows you to craft non-lethal weapons, and then that has no bearing on the gameplay whatsoever.
Well, wait, weren't we just saying we wanted a choice where the good choice wasn't rewarded in a big obvious way?
Yeah, but generally it should be different.
Yeah. It should be have an effect.
Yeah, it shouldn't just be you feeling like you got good points for using the good bullets and not the bad bullets.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like they made the demo before they made the game, and that might not be the best way to make something.
Yeah, it also, at least me, felt like the game was kind of split between paranoia and psychedelic, and they never really committed to one or the other.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, like the 60s and the 70s did have both.
Let's see here. David writes a parenthetical here at first. Just wanted to throw this out there, but David mentioned the game Infernax on a previous episode, and I checked it out because of him. I'm loving the game. Thank you for sharing that, David. But David's answer is, and I suppose I would have to go with Fallout 4's settlement system. I would build straight up fortresses with turrets on all the walls and just about every building. to just never get attacked. But then again, who in their right mind would even think about breaking into something like that? Still, would have been fun to see a huge attack happen every once in a while. Yeah, it's one of those things. If your defense value is high enough, people just won't attack it. Or you won't get called to go in and defend it. Yeah.
Yeah, the reward of doing well should be now you don't get to play.
It's weird. Yeah, it's like that old movie, the only way to win is not to play.
Now we're talking about Spec Ops again.
Oh, wait, no, it's the other way around. It's the only way to play is not to win.
Oh, boy.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, God. Let's see here. David, what does David say?
That I didn't is a do this David sandwich right there.
Yeah.
Yep.
We have three Davids in a row. David, David, and David.
So David says, Seventh Saga, the game I've spent the most hours playing, while never being able to beat it. It's a SNES RPG that allowed you to choose between seven playable characters and recruit one of the others as your teammate, while the rest become your rivals. The concept and story were great, but the game was extremely grindy, buggy, and just stupid hard. I've always wanted a remake, but in lieu of that, I've decided to turn it into a campaign for my D&D group. Mm. Instead of rival characters, they have rival parties consisting of characters from other games we've played. That's pretty cool.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Way to harvest in a good idea. Mm-hmm. And then finally here from the listener responses, Ben, what does Rookie say? Sorry, David pours this one over.
Dave quoted Rookie in saying, I remember reading about Castlevania 2 NES and thinking this was going to be the greatest game ever. You could explore a huge world to the right and left to find dungeons, get clues and gear from townsfolk, bring Dracula back to life, and then kill him real good. Technically, all these things were true, but the game was garbage. Luckily, 35 years later, someone finally made a good Castlevania 2, and it's called Infernax. If only I could mod in some deterministic jumps.
Oh, I didn't realize it didn't have deterministic jumps. Although I guess it's more of a Zelda 2 than it is a Castlevania. So.
So what is a deterministic jump?
You would know it if you felt it. The old Castlevania games, you couldn't change direction in the air once you jumped. Like, if you jumped, you were committed to it.
Okay, that's interesting.
As opposed to, like, in Mario or Sonic, where you can steer in the middle of the air.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, random thing on that. I don't know why this brings it to mind, but the most recent, the Dying Light 2, my favorite upgrade you can get to the parkour system, just because it makes no sense, is the ability to, like, turn around 180 in the air. but the reason it's funny, like, it's basically meant to... before that, like, parkour move where you, like, as you jump over an edge, you, like, grab the side and, like, spin and then, like, duck into a window or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, you know, I don't know, them not being able to or not wanting to animate that. Literally what you do is, like, jump, stop, turn 180, and go in the other direction. and then... Random question that I've been wondering with Castlevania. I went back, I remember, way back in the day and played some of the early Castlevania games on, like, one of the SNES emulators, and they were basically side-scrollers.
Yeah, yeah.
When did Castlevania become part of the Metroidvania genre?
Symphony of the Night.
Which was the Game Boy game?
No, that was the PlayStation one.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, Symphony of the Night, 1997. At least here in America, that's when that came out. That was it wasn't really intended even to be a mainline Castlevania game. It was kind of a spinoff, but then it became the once they moved to portable, primarily you know, people loved Symphony of the Night so much that like the portable games that took that style overshadowed anything they did in 3D.
Okay, because the portable was actually, I think, is the only ones I've played with any degree of like, you know, other than just emulating or whatever. But yeah, it really confused me. It doesn't help also that all of those games have very samey titles.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, Dracula's Curse, and you know.
Well, I was thinking for like the actual like portable ones in Symphony of the Night, they are all like musical term of the.
Oh, so you were talking about the new ones. Yeah. So Harmony of Dissonance and stuff like that. Yeah. I'll do mine just because I was inspired by the fact that the post image for this is Fable 3. Man, I really wish that Black and White had a good game put around the train and animal simulator kind of thing in it, you know, where you could, you know, like that your avatar was one of a handful of different animals. And, you know, it started out dumb as a box of rocks. And it observed your behaviors as a god, you know, things that you went around and did, and it would mimic them, right? The problem is that was attached to just kind of a real dog shit combination like RTS and City Builder. And that's a bummer because there was an awful lot of promise. But then again, that is lionhead.txt. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
This is true.
David, how about you?
Man, I know this is one I'm going to come up with a, like, the answer I should have gave as soon as we're done recording, but the one that comes to mind right now is, probably EVE Online, in that I feel like that would be an amazing economic crafting system for some game. It's just they forgot the game.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like I know if you like plugged that into pretty much any sci-fi MMO, that would be amazing. There's just never any payoff.
You're saying the crafting system specifically good? What's the crafting system?
Well, like the economy and crafting system. Just like the industry like pseudo 4X thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Go ahead.
I think me and Dennis have the same answer.
So go ahead.
I was going to use the example like Friday the 13th and Evolve as well, but also extend it to board games have the same issue as well, where anything that's asymmetric, where it's like one person versus four, and the one person's like super powerful, and the other four people might not be. This happens in legacy games as well, where you have this problem where, so say somebody wins the first game of a legacy game, you want to reward that player to incentivize them for winning or reward them for winning. But then the problem is now they're better fit the next game that you're playing against them. And so now they're more likely to win again the second time.
Yeah.
And you still want to reward them. And so now you have to reward them again. They're better fit for the next game. And you get this like snowball effect. And so it's really hard to find a board game that's kind of managed that sort of thing, where you can both actually reward the person who won, but then not have a snowball effect where they just like steamroll everyone time over time. And it's kind of like this with like this asymmetric games like Friday the 13th or Evolve, where it's like it's really tough to balance them. I know with the experience from Friday the 13th, like whoever's Jason like greatly impacts the game. If you have like a noob playing them, everyone's going to escape and it's not going to be that much fun. And then on the flip side, if you have like an expert playing them, then everyone just gets trounced and dies. And it's like, it's really tough to have like good balance mechanics in those games. So it'd be nice to see a game like be able to make that, but then be able to make it like consistently fun no matter who's playing it.
Yeah.
So, well, it almost runs into this problem of like the monster or the, you know, the powerful one player is almost kind of the DM for the game. But you can't, like, how much are you going to play as DM when you're explicitly rewarded to just trounce the other party as hard as possible?
Well, and yeah. It seems to me like it kind of runs into a fundamental problem of like, if I'm playing a co-op game, it's because I don't want to be playing a competitive game.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Like, I know, like, I feel like that's the... it. Less so for a video game, particularly for a board game, like, if that's the whole reason I play, you know, co-op board games is because they're co-op.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's got this interesting dynamic of the, you know, so mine was Evolve, if that hasn't become clear yet. And it's like, you know, the strength of the weaker four players is that they are a team and can play as a team, but as you said, like, having your fate truly in the hands of three other people who might be randos who disconnect doesn't feel great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and also it's like, by then definition, one player is the outsider. And it's like, yeah, that's if I wanted that, I could just go back to high school.
Yeah. But Ben, you used the exact word, right? Which is asymmetrical. Like that's what I want in games. I love it. Every time I see it, I love the idea of it. And Evolve is just the most notable example of a game that didn't quite crack it. But the more I can have, you know, competing with each other by doing radically different things in a game, the happier I am.
Mm-hmm.
So Dead by Daylight, I guess is the second life of Evolve in a way.
Yeah.
I mean,
and they seem to have done a pretty good job with it.
And that solves the problem you're talking about, David, where you can queue for either killer or survivor in that game, I think.
True. I feel like the one game I've seen asymmetric do well would be The Cycle back when it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like everybody's answer. And that also sounds like a segment. Thank you, everybody, for responding. If you would like to participate, you can go to thelevel.com. Sorry, facebook.com/thelevel and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
I guess you could go to thelevelpodcast.com. That does work, but you won't be able to answer.
Right. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that we're excited about. Dennis, you posted yours here first. So what's happening on television?
Yeah, I foreshadowed this. God of War is on my PS4 bucket list, and it just got a little more urgent because, like I guess they're doing with every video game now, it's hitting a TV series. And so this one is coming out on Prime Video, theoretically. And I think it's pretty early in production. But yeah, this is just an interesting trend continuing where I don't know who flipped the switch and decided that we're going to do video game shows now.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, howdy are they. So yeah, I guess the list that's shorter is video games that don't have a TV series.
I think once HBO got The Last of Us, there was a bit of a rush at studios to go after other stuff. Although they weren't the first. I mean, Netflix had Castlevania, stuff of that nature.
Yeah. Well, Netflix did is doing a Devil May Cry as well. So.
Oh, I never heard about that.
Well,
I mean, the Devil May Cry anime was pretty good.
Yeah, that's on there. And then, I think they are doing a reboot of that. I don't know if it's animated still or not, but the interesting thing I think, obviously they're doing it off of the most recent God of War game because that has, you know, a comprehensible story and a character that can be, if not liked, related to.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see the schmucks that picked up the old God of War franchise to do a real action.
Damn it, we got the wrong one.
Yeah. Well, we're stuck with it now. Which is just like I imagine to be, you know, the intro to a porn video, but just the porn never quite shows up. It just gets more and more violent.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Yeah. Going on to my story. So back toward the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a massive bundle of games on itch.io to raise money for various causes related to, you know, medical stuff. Well, they're doing it again. There is the itch.io bundle for Ukraine, which has a similar value proposition, just about 1,000 works for $10, those 1,000 works being worth $6,500 all told, with the proceeds going, it's a minimum of $10, proceeds going to International Medical Corps, which should feel pretty obvious, and then also Voice of Children, which is a specifically Ukrainian charity that helps children with things like, you know, aid and shelters and stuff like that. Especially important as, you know, we all see the horrifying imagery and just the, I don't know, talking about it more would make me angry. And I don't want to be angry. I would like to focus on the cool thing that game developers are doing to, you know, raise money to help people who desperately need it. And there's cool stuff in here, too. Like Skatebird is a big one. Celeste is in there. Minute is a cool game I've talked about. Super Hot. If you haven't played Super Hot, what's wrong with you? Get this and play Super Hot. Baba Is You is fun. I could comprehend at least the first half of it.
Same.
Yeah. So
they have a couple of Jalos talked about too. They have Sundred and they have Nightcall in here.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. So
Sundred is one of the best games I've ever played.
Yeah. It's in there.
So I realize that the first half of Baba Is You is literally Baba I. So I'm imagining Cole looking at Baba Is You and going, Baba I.
Bye bye. Oh, I didn't even go in here. Yeah, no, they've got Cloud Gardens. That's a fun little a fun little game. Oh, there's good there's some good horror stuff in here. There's like tabletop books included. Yeah, no, this is this is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The hardest part is figuring out what games you actually own after buying it or paying for it.
There are sites. There was a site for the previous one where like you could do like a do a search and see based on it. Ooh, Spookware's in here. Oh yeah, there's tons of good stuff. Glittermitten Grove, Baldi's Basics. Yeah. Neat.
Yeah, all kinds of good stuff. And there is a good deal of overlap from the first bundle, mm-hmm. but you know, that's that. The selection it's of games 10, is only half the reason you're doing it.
It's $10. Yep. Like, that's not nothing. I'm not going to judge you, but like, yeah, this is an opportunity. If you missed it the first time, you can do this. And also, if you donated the first time, this is also a worthy cause. Yeah. So that's mine. I'm excited about that. Ben, did you put one in?
I have nothing.
Okay. Sorry.
And it's after 7 o'clock, so I'm not going to look anything up.
Sounds good. So we'll round out here. I'm excited about this, David. Hey, David, what's going on in the world of the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yeah. So this is actually something I didn't know was a thing. I've, you know, heard Californication. I'd never actually seen the music video.
It's a good music video.
Say it again.
It's a good music video.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's you know, kind of the band members in a video game, and it's kind of fun because it's, what would you say? Would this be like PS1, PS2?
This felt explicitly Dreamcast-y to me. There's something about the look on this. And I'm not saying that like as a burn, but like it looks like it is the Red Hot Chili Peppers, for lack of a better word, band members, mm-hmm. kind of playing just like a whole bunch of like, but like a Dreamcast game demo disc. And so like it was pretty mind blowing at the time when it came out, you know, because the 3D animation, et cetera, whatever. But also I felt really catered to because like I like the Dreamcast and I like the, you know, the aesthetic of those games. So continue the story, David. Sorry.
Yeah. And I like it's, you know, having someone who didn't, you know, this was a thing for me the first time around. So, yeah, I don't have any nostalgia for it. But I like the fact that it's very evocative, mm-hmm. in that, like, all of the scenes, it's like, oh yeah, I played that game. I have no idea what that game is, but I definitely played that.
Yeah.
But now you can actually play that game because someone made a game of, made the actual game in the music video, and you can download it and play it.
It doesn't play the song, but there are some buttons that will automatically load up a browser window with the song in YouTube.
Oh man, Red Hot Chili Peppers was like one of the early bands that was very big on don't put our stuff on YouTube. I know that's changed now just because times have changed, but
fuck those fools. So like this is an itch game, and like I've wanted this ever. I saw like a joke tweet where somebody said Game Jam, where people make the games from the Californication video, and turns out this person, what's their name, Coma and Dog Dev, or Mikkel, just do a search for Californication on itch and you'll probably get it. The fact that this person made it is super cool, because for as much as it's embarrassing music, Californication is one of the first albums that I bought with my own money, so so there's nostalgia there.
Yep. It's good video game music.
You can go back to the times when it was acceptable to be playing guitar shirtless all the time.
not just shirtless, my friend. Have I got some news about the Red Hot Chili Peppers for you? Yeah,
I've been watching the video on mute as we've been talking about it, and there is a section of this game where they jump the car through a donut stand, like giant donut on the roof thing, foreshadowing the like viral challenge in GTA 5. To jump through the it's like hold the nuts donut shop or whatever, a sign in ever more elaborate ways. So Red Hot Chili Peppers did it first.
Pioneers.
So that wasn't where I thought that might be going, because we're talking about clothing optional, and you're like, whoa, I'm watching this video.
I'm getting some ideas about how to use a sock. Man. Those silly, silly men. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
They're silly old men now, which is kind of scary.
I asked the question, how do we feel about buttoning it up?
I need someone to button it for me because my hands don't work that well anymore. I'm old. No, that's button.
The credit. Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate you doing the thing. If you would, I should say, we've been doing a ton of back end work on the Patreon and stuff like that. So if you're hearing this, if you're wondering, hey, why didn't this episode show up on one feed or another, go look at Patreon and see, because we changed the way that we are doing early release. So there's a separate feed so that the early release public stuff is not mixed in with the premium stuff, to make it for a hopefully less cluttered and more controllable experience. And there are other things there. There's also I made new episode art for the episodes. So you guys, if you want to go to thelevelpodcast.com, you can see like the cool little template that I made for all of the episode art. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you debut this with the Ace Attorney?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I remember seeing that and be like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I didn't know that was a universal thing.
Yeah. I'm slowly going back and doing past episodes, but we've done over 400 of them. So it might take some time to fill it out, but going forward.
Yeah, you're doing a bit.
I hope you can mostly pull from the banners that you already had, right?
For a lot of them. There's also like I've kept the source on most of them as well, you know. So
smart man.
Yeah, I don't delete something unless I really, really have to. Is kind of the thing. So that's a common thing in my life. I'm discovering. So you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv if you want to hear the Bonfireside chats about Elden Ring. The first two episodes of that season are going to be free. So the first impressions episode that we did, and then the next one, which is going to be about the mechanics and the opening, that's going to be available for everybody as well. So we're giving folks a taste. Otherwise, ratings, reviews, am I forgetting anything big?
Don't think so.
All right. I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitch streaming near at Deck of Wonders.
I'm David Meismith. You can find me in the Lands Between, unless I'm using the new stealth mechanic.
In which case, try me.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. So it's going to both of these are David specials and they're both really good. It's going to be real hard to beat this first one that I'm going to say, though.
Okay. All right.
The only way to play is not to win.
Yes.
I'm going to go hard in the paint on that one. And then the other one is they use Discord to create order, which is
I had literally the same two. Yes.
Did you have any others, David?
I had three. I had a fun bit. I'll probably drop in an episode or two. I had non-video game content. And I had, let's button.
What was the middle one there, David?
What was the
second one that you said?
Non-video game content.
Okay, non-video game content. Okay, Ben, what you got?
I have my son's first Max Min, and I have it just gets more and more violent.
But yeah, I will second the only way to play is not to win.
Yeah, I'm fine with that either, David's.
It really bothers me that you guys say Max Men.
Oh, yeah, I'm only saying it to mock Ben.
Okay. Oh, shit. Do I say too much? Is it not
good? No, you say it backwards.
Yeah, it's
min-max.
Min-max is the one that I first heard when I first started playing like tabletop and also playing stuff on playing EverQuest.
I am mortified that you thought I was condoning that.
I'm sorry. Maybe I just alphabetized it in my mind or something. I don't know.
Wow.
That is the best pen thing I've ever heard.
I like that.
So you max min the min maxing by alphabetizing.
Hey, David, that can't be the title. We've already picked a title.
That's right. Polls have closed.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that to make you self-conscious, Ben. I wrote it down /min and I had to voice my dissonance. The point of language is communication, and I think we all understand what you mean. So
efficient communication, however, would demand that you reverse it.
To be fair.
All right. Well, I need to go to bed because I'm very tired.
Yeah, I gotta hear you, crazy kooks. Good hanging out.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.